Autism is a medical mystery. The cause or source of it has yet to be discovered. The effects of it can vary from child to child. The rumors and myths about it create confusion for parents and even medical experts in some cases. In New Jersey, this issue gains a lot of weight due to the fact that the state's autism rate is significantly higher than the national average. With us now is a doctor and a mother of autistic children who has developed an approach to quiet what's happening within an autistic child that results in releasing more of that child's growth as well as emotional strength. She shares all this in her book, The Unprescription for Autism, A Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, and More Focused Child. She's also the founder of Autism Health, Dr. Janet Lintala. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
And the doctor's website, loveautismhealth.com. And we'll get into your book shortly, Janet, but just for clarification for people, because, and I use autism as the, just for audible, because there's elements of autism spectrum disorder, Asperger's, but just for the sake of conversation, what does autism entail as far as how it impacts generally a child afflicted with it?
Well, generally, it's going to affect communication and social skills, and those are the core deficits of autism spectrum disorder, but it has a host of other associated issues too, physical and mental. They're more prone to anxiety and mood disorders. They're more prone to gastrointestinal dysfunction, immune dysfunction, things that you can't see with the eye, inflammation and oxidative stress going on in the brain. And it's just, it's a package deal. In fact, people are starting to call it a collection of little autisms, and each person's collection is different.
And is there a red zone as far as age is concerned as to when a child is most prone to the onset of autism?
To be in the toddler years. Some, like my son, were just different from the get-go, and the American Academy of Pediatrics is on the job, and they're recommending screening for all infants at, I believe, 24 and 30 months, and 18 months is an age in there that you want to be careful with. So in those toddler years is where we want to be careful, and of course, as screening tools develop and get more accurate, I'm sure they'll move that age back.
Because I think there had been a competing report saying that wait until 2 and 3 years old. And, you know, I think of, you know, when you talk about cancer, for example, early detection gives you the best chance for either curing it or lessening its impact. So why does autism fall away from that exception to that rule?
Oh, it doesn't. Earlier intervention is clearly better. And this report actually, they were asked to evaluate the evidence to recommend screening for the general population. And they're not saying we shouldn't screen. They're saying there's not enough evidence to suggest it. So what they're really saying is we need a huge long-term research study where we look at a population that's been screened and a population that hasn't been screened. But it would really be unethical to let a large chunk of children go without screening. So I don't think we're going to see that happen. I think everybody's on it. We're all on board that we're going to screen. And earlier is better.
And I would think, too, that the earlier the screening, the earlier the greater the understanding of how autism develops in a child would probably, I mean, this is it a case where at this point does medical science have to almost work backwards instead of finding the source or the reason or the cause of it, find out more about it, and then discover what's causing it? Because over the years, we've seen everything from genetics to environment to vaccination cocktails, and all can be either not really consensus of science agreeing with one or the other. Some make the argument of, well, for example, vaccine cocktails don't cause autism per se, but much like you don't die of AIDS, the vaccine cocktails create the susceptibility to whatever it is that does bring on autism. There's that line of thought as well. So is it more wise to learn more of how it impacts a child and then maybe through that get the context clues of how it originates?
Yes, and actually, researchers are frantically approaching it from all directions. I actually have a child in my practice who's never had a vaccine in their life and is still autistic, so obviously vaccines are not going to be responsible for autism. I will point out, people on the spectrum, children and adults, are sensitive to anything, whether it's ingredients in a vaccine, a prescription medication, or even natural supplements. We're very careful at my office, even with the natural supplements. They're finding different subsets of autism now. The first two have been identified. They believe there is an inflammation subset to autism. And they just tend to be in a chronic state of inflammation and oxidative stress, and that's including the brain. And that can cause that dull, tired look that we see when they're struggling to work through their school day. And then there is an immune subset, too. And they've proven that the autoimmune system is attacking multiple tissues in the brain. And the more research from any direction that goes on is going to show us how to reach each child or adult on the spectrum and help them have a vibrant, healthy, happy life on the spectrum. There's no cure or treatment for autism itself, but it's all the associated little collection of health issues and skill deficits that need to be addressed. We're actually at the point now where people hate to even say it's a disorder or a catastrophe or a tragedy. People are beginning to realize it may just be a different way of being wired, and they're celebrating what they call neurodiversity.
Talking with Dr. Jen Lantala, who is the founder of Autism Health. LoveAutismHealth.com is the website. Also author of The Unprescription for Autism, A Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, and More Focused Child. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Mentioned in the intro how New Jersey's autism rates are significantly higher than the national. National average is 1 in 62. It's 1 in 45 children in New Jersey. We want to break that down to gender. 1 in 28 boys and 1 in 133 girls is how they arrive at that. Average out at 1 in 45 children for the state of New Jersey. And referencing your book, Doctor, because, again, the argument has been, is it genetic? Is it environmental? Is it emotional? Judging by the unprescription for autism, I'm sensing that you believe it's a combination of emotional and environment.
I believe genetics are involved, too. There is no autism gene. You know, they spent a lot of years and a lot of money trying to hunt for the autism gene, and there isn't one. However, there are many genes, possibly hundreds of genes, that can be affected by the environment. We all know our genes are affected by the environment. And if the environment turns off a gene or makes it less efficient at whatever its metabolic job was supposed to be, that shows up in a loss of skill or function or some health issues. And I have heard that New Jersey's rate is the highest in the country. And the people that are following the environmental influences on our genetics feel that New Jersey's at the eastern edge of the country. Our Gulf Stream flows from, you know, west to east, and that perhaps New Jersey is receiving the bulk of the toxins that just accumulate over the country on the Gulf Stream. We're not sure what the model is yet.
And in your book, what you address is, in a way, is it if you can resolve the physical effects of autism, it lessens the muffling of potential of a child and helps them overcome the autism? Is that a sense of a summation?
Nothing in the book is going to treat, quote, fix, prevent or cure autism. However, these associated issues dramatically affect the brain, the language, the mood, irritability, sleep patterns, bowel habits. If you have a child, let's say we're looking at two children side by side in a classroom.
Okay.
Is autistic and one is typically developing. They might even look the same. There is no look to autism. Yet the child with autism might be struggling mightily through his school day because of the unseen challenges on the spectrum that we can address and we can support. What if the child with autism has brain inflammation or opiate-like peptides circulating through his brain or autoimmune attack on the brain? He's beset with sensory issues that are overwhelming to him, or anxiety. He might not have gotten a good night's sleep. He might be constipated. That child's going to struggle a lot more, and the teacher's going to struggle to reach that child. And so simply by addressing all of these known physiological and health issues, this child can now brighten up, feel better, and have a good day at school, have a good day at therapy, have a good day playing on the playground. And no, we haven't cured or treated autism, but we've definitely changed the level of function.
And by doing that without medicating the child any further than what is necessary, if it's necessary, that too is a curve away from what had been a growing trend with the way of treating autism and the behavior issues.
Yes, we've all been looking for the drug, you know, the prescription that's going to fix everything. And, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics has stated prescriptions don't address the core deficits of autism. They shouldn't be the primary treatment. I didn't write the anti-prescription. I'm all for the appropriate use of medications, but they're not the first thing we should reach for. So if you're in a visit with your autistic child and you say, my child can't sleep, the doctor might offer you a sleeping medication. What we need to do is say, why can't this child sleep? Is it acid reflux? Is it belly pain and inflammation? Is it constipation? We can fix those and get this child to sleep without knocking them out with a pill. Same goes for irritability. Tons and tons and tons of children and adults on the spectrum are medicated for difficult behaviors and irritability. And it's because they don't feel well. But no one's helping them feel better. We're just medicating them until they be quiet. So I'm all for addressing these invisible health issues, raising awareness of them, natural ways that don't have any side effects. And then they don't need to be medicated. And if they do, at that point, it's probably appropriate.
And that is what Dr. Lintala presents in the Unprescription for Autism, a Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, More Focused Child. It's a program that she had developed and put into practice in her practice and has become now a book for all parents of autistic children to gain, I think, valuable knowledge and certainly counter to what has been traditional. Traditional is not always the best, as we've come to learn, whether it be for family situations or medical situations. And what Dr. Lintala presents is a much more viable alternative with proven effects and successes that are certainly positive. Learn more about her work at loveautismhealth.com. Her book, again, The Unprescription for Autism, A Natural Approach for a Calmer, Happier, and More Focused Child. Dr. Janet Lintala, thanks so much for being here this morning.
Chris, it was a pleasure. Thank you.